This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Good evening, you're listening to Love Sport Radio. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11pm this evening. It is time for our Sunday night fan show special, and kicking things off, as always, at 8pm every Sunday evening, it's the FC Wimbledon fan show, and I'm here, joined, as ever, by George Jones of the 9 Years podcast. Hello, George.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, mate. How are you? You came in, you lumbered in a little bit. Yeah, well, I don't want to say what kind of word you lumbered in as, but hey, so near yet so far yesterday, of course, almost double bubble on the win front, but a last-minute equaliser from Bolton to deny the Dons victory at the Macron / University of Bolton Stadium.
Yeah, it's one of those games where, you know, people will hear what you said, read that we conceded a last-minute equaliser and assume we were unlucky not to win or that we deserved a point. To be honest, I think we were lucky to get a point. We were dominated by a team who started their season playing the under-18s, and going into the game we're on 1 point. You know, we were outplayed by them. The lack of quality showed by them at times showed. They weren't a very good side, but at times they outplayed us and they outworked us. And the lack of, I mean, I can understand us being a poor team technically. I've got no problem with that because realistically that's where we are. But the number of players who were outworked by their opposition marker, it weren't good yesterday. There was only one player who I've written down who had a good game. And he came on at half-time, and that was Shane McLaughlin. He deserves a lot of credit because he chased everything, he worked everything. It was a proper AFC Wimbledon, sort of Wimbledon FC performance from McLaughlin when he came on, in the sense that he worked. He's not a great technical player, but he worked for us. And not enough players did that for us yesterday.
Wow, so actually dominated by Bolton. Is that really what you're saying from what happened yesterday?
Yeah, they had more chances than us. They had better chances, and a better team would have completely put us away and would have really put us in a bad place. It would be very harsh on them to say they didn't deserve a point, or that I could argue that they deserved all three. And I think it was disheartening walking away, seeing Bolton, where they are in the league, what they've had to go through, and us not being able to put them away and put in a performance when we've had a 2 week break.
Okay, well, just to let listeners know, we've got plenty coming up over the course of the next hour. George, with his trusty academy and development squad update, of course, we're looking ahead to that game with Doncaster, the third meeting between the two teams this season. George, you must be sick of them, absolutely sick to the back teeth of them. And also, we're going to be talking about, of course, the ongoing ownership / stadium saga. So if you want to get involved, get your tweets in, get your phone calls in, very easy to do so. 0208 70 20 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number, you know this, or just tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Going back to the game, George, Marcus Force, it must be something very close to you having to do the show in your pants.
Yeah, well, we didn't agree to that, but
pretty sure we did, mate. It's on. We'll get Dave to pull it up.
Yeah, we'll find it if it exists.
Yeah.
But I did say after his first or second game for us that he'd scored 10 goals by the time he went back in January. I was very concerned because he's been on
mate.
Seven since very early October, but he got a brace yesterday, and that for him will hopefully kickstart where he can be. And now he's on 9 goals for us.
He is, yeah.
He's 1 goal away.
His first goals in 5, I believe. Got that hat-trick against Southend in early October, like you said. Hadn't scored, but came back with a vengeance. 2 very, very well-taken goals. The second one in particular, kind of, without getting too carried away, Robin van Persie-esque, in a sense, of just the quick reaction time and the finish to put it beyond the goalkeeper. Anywhere else in that goal, and it may well not have gone in. I think the defender was on the line as well. I just want to talk about the first goal. Is there something in the air at AFC Wimbledon that every time a player scores, they have to give it the shush? Who was he giving the shush to?
Well, I think it's more to do with the fact that our players get a lot of stick because they're not great. So they get a lot of stick from opposition fans. Our manager, Gallini, gets a bit of stick because he's one of the more animated touchline managers. And he's, like I've talked about on the show before, he's constantly in the fourth official's ear. So we're not exactly a team where teams like playing against them at home. So quite often, opposition fans are getting on our players' backs when they make mistakes or all of that. So it's more of a sort of, yeah, we're still going, we're still fighting. And it was a bizarre fight. The attitude from Bolton towards us and our attitude towards them yesterday really surprised me. Because considering how close they were to not existing, I thought there'd be a bit sort of, and obviously what we've gone through and what we're about to go through. It's just, it wasn't an atmosphere that I was expecting. It seemed fairly sort of agitated and hostile as well. But it was just, it seemed weird, but because I was expecting, it was two teams at the bottom of the table, so I was expecting it to be a poor game. But I didn't expect some of their fans to be going and giving like Marcus Forth stick early on.
Was there not an affinity then between the fans? Like you said, of course, what's been going on at the moment, there wasn't that sort of close companionship in a sense. I know there can't be absolutely in game. Football is football and eventually the emotions spill over and you want your team to win a game. But like you said, I thought the affinity, of course, and I'm sure you guys reached out to them when all of this was going on.
Yeah, we were. And I mean, let's be honest, there was a time towards the end of last season where everyone thought Bolton would have to restart. So I have no idea how they've managed to survive without doing it. And especially maintain a relatively competitive League One side, despite what the table says. So for me, it's just a bit of a surprise that it wasn't that affinity, because I did think there would be that of, you know, you've gone through hell, we've been through hell, we're about to go through hell. There just wasn't that attitude of, you know, togetherness between two sets of fans, which I thought there might have been going into the game.
Yeah, I thought so too. Just to finish on Marcus Forth, of course, that's a goal every 96 minutes in League One now. The best record of any other striker in the league. So, not money well spent, but a loan well spent, absolutely.
Let's not advertise the fact that he's got the best strike rate in League One. But let's not do that until the end of January. We really need to try and keep him.
All the top managers in League One listening right now. Dan, I'm sorry, I'm taking it. Let's press the dump button quick. Let's get it out. Let's not put it out there. But no, a great record for him. But let's talk about the two goals. First, a Daryl Murphy header. By the way, he's on a great run as well. I think that's five successive games he scored. First time he's ever done that in his career. It was the first time he'd ever scored four in successive games against Accrington. Of course, they got trounced on that occasion, not on this occasion. But the first goal, Nathan Trott seemingly took it away from the man on the line. Who was the man on the line on the post?
I cannot remember. But it was one of them. And Trott, he had a lot of situations like that during the game where he sort of halfway came off his line but didn't really deal with it.
And there was one in the first half, wasn't there, early on?
There was one in the first half where Ryan Delaney and him got confused and got mixed up between them. And it's just, Nathan Trott's a very young keeper and he's quite small physically, so he doesn't have the confidence or the ability to just go and clear a man out and get that ball away. And for him, he needs to learn that either he's got to be brave, go out and clear it, or he's got to stay on his line and trust his defender to do it. Because both goals were completely avoidable yesterday. And that's not great. When you're fighting at the bottom of the league against a team you need to be beating, you can't be giving away two goals.
I don't think, though, you can attribute fault to him for the second goal. I mean, we're looking at two goals that have been scored as a result of crosses into the box, but the second one from Dodu, I don't think that's Nathan Trott's fault.
The second one wasn't Trott's fault, but again, it was a situation where really, we look at it and we conceded two goals from set pieces when we were a bigger side than them. And I think questions need to be asked about that. But we were trying to make a sub before their second goal from the corner. We were trying to bring Terrell Thomas on. And we were signalling over. Lino was even flagging for a sub. But the referee was just waving it off saying, no, you're not making it. And then corner comes in. We're not set because we thought we were bringing an extra centre back on. And it's 2-2, last kick of the game.
Well, so the referee didn't allow the sub to take place?
He didn't allow the substitution to take place when we were trying to bring on a centre-back.
Were you primed and was he ready?
Yeah, he was ready. He'd been ready for about a minute on the touchline, waiting on the halfway line.
Wow.
And the ref didn't. And, you know, it's one of these things where we shouldn't be making excuses. But I really don't think we would have conceded from a corner had Terrell Thomas been able to come on.
Well, still 3 points clear of that drop zone, of course. So there is a bit of breathing space. Southend, less said about them, the better, I think. I mean, disastrous. I personally can almost feel Sol Campbell's footsteps out of that door. Not from being sacked. I kind of feel like he might actually walk away because it's damaging to his reputation as a manager.
Well, we'll have to see how much money he gets out of Macclesfield before he's willing to walk.
Yeah, absolutely. And just some other news from the game. Kwesi?
Yeah, Kwesi Appiah. It was something that came out in the sort of days leading up to the game. Kwesi Appiah, who's got absolutely no history of injury or anything else at all, has been ruled out for 8 weeks, which, you know, it's not a surprise. Like, he's one of these players who I don't think anyone even raised an eyebrow when we saw he's out for 2 months. And it's one of those where we could have really needed, we needed a body, we needed a striker. We had Adam Roscoe on the bench, and I mean, I've spoken about him before, I'll speak about him later in the show. We could have probably done with Kwesi being on the bench, but the fact that he's not there and the number of times he's been not there, you got to ask if we're getting value for money from him.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's value for money?
Yeah,
He's
one of our top earners at the club on what at the time was the longest deal in the club's history. And I need to check, but his availability must be around 50% or lower over the 3-year contract when he's one of our top earners.
Okay, you mentioned Roscoe there. He did a nice piece on the website this week, didn't he? A good interview with the club saying he kind of wants to kickstart, reignite his career.
Yeah, I mean, Adam Roscoe, we'll talk about him later in the show when we're talking about sort of the development game this week. But he's someone who he needs something to happen for him to kickstart his career with us and to kickstart his Football League career. Because he's in a position of, if it doesn't work for him with us, it's very difficult to see where his career can go as a professional full-time player. Because of where he's come from, if it doesn't work for him with us, where can it work?
Mm. Okay, George, well, that is a good reflection on the game. I tell you what, we will let Glyn Hodges take us to the ads. Here's what he had to say after the game.
I'm sitting here deflated and disappointed, but proud of how we've gone about it and proud of what we achieved, going there, getting those in front twice and not seeing it through. Feels like a defeat, but you know, after the win last week and coming here and getting a point away from not being great, is still pluses, so... You know, everyone's on a bit of a downer, but we'll just, you know, we'll come in on Monday and work out and look at, pick the bones out of it and go again and refreshed and, you know, and see if we can get a win against Doncaster. I don't know, it's 4 minutes. It was four to go winning on 4 minutes, 23 seconds. We've got it on the analysis. I've just looked at it now. So, you know, I don't know. You know, we're asking our players about attention to detail in games. It's massive. So, you know, perhaps other people might think about attention to detail on their side of games as well, because four minutes, 23 seconds... I know that's disappointing. But although it could have been avoided, both goals could have been avoided. So we're not hiding behind the referee. You're hoping really the whistle blows, but we could have avoided it. But by doing two instances in that build up for that goal, that we should have done better. We had a chance to slide it down the side. There, we're getting more and more bodies forward. We had a chance there on the edge of the box. We had a chance to win it and get a foot through. We didn't do that. So you know, it's just. I mean, listen. I'm looking on that pitch and seeing how many players. I've got the experience of being in a situation like this with the youngest squad in the team, so it's a learning curve now. Hopefully, that's what I said to him. I said, listen, don't worry, I'm proud of you. It's a great point. 3 points would have been fantastic, back-to-back wins, but as long as we learn and we move forward and it doesn't happen again, it's just we've spoken before. So it's a massive learning curve and it's a hard pill to swallow, but you know, there's also we're proud and pleased with the point. I've been encouraged last week against Gillingham, different type of game, got the win, and today we've come and shown up and you know, we just tweaked a little thing slightly and they was on board on that, and I felt that we looked like we were going to score, we looked like potentially we would get a shot on target and work the keeper, so and it's nice to see Marcus with his two goals and he's up and running, so you know, there's a lot of pluses. We've got some good finishes in the club, you know, so it's nice. We you know, just the trick is to put them in the right areas for them to score, and Pigs laid on it, you know, obviously assisted him today, so you know, they're a good partnership, and you know, we've got goals in the team.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's Love Sport Radio. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. this evening. Time for our Sunday night fan show special. Right now, it's the AFC Wimbledon fan show. I'm joined by George Jones of the 9 Years podcast, as ever. Right, everybody, it's time to recline in those seats. Sit back, compose yourself. Get yourself ready, get your faculties ready, because of course there was the Don's Trust response to the open letters this week. 8,005 words, I calculated from that statement. I calculated, Microsoft Word calculated it, to be fair. 8,005 words. So I am now going to read every single one of... No, I'm just kidding. George, calm down. I'm not actually going to do that. Relax. I'm going to let you... take the stage here and just discuss that response to those open letters and the answers that fans and members were given.
Yeah, this is something which Nick and Stu were on the show last week. They talked about it a lot. But this week, the latest development is that the Don's Trust has responded to that open letter sent by the fans to the board. And the responses in there have, if anything, made the situation more complicated and less clear than it already was, if that was even possible. But the headlines, I mean, everyone reading it, depending on what... It's one of those things where that letter could say whatever you wanted it to say. If you went into that, reading that letter, wanting to sell out and sell our club, then you can justify that by what you read in it. Or if, like me, you went in, you read that letter looking for reasons to not sell the club and to stay fan-owned and keep fighting what we're fighting for, then there's enough in there to make me believe this is our only option. This is what's right.
So kind of one of those where if you look hard enough, you'll find what you want to see.
Yeah, and that's the exact opposite of what this letter needed to be. It needed to be short answers, clear answers that very much tell you the facts, or if the facts aren't clear in that area or are not available for confidentiality reasons, because this is a business deal at the end of the day. And if something can't be said, just one line saying this is confidential, we can't discuss this at this time.
But do you think that would have then been accepted by the wider audience? Because we talked last week on the show quite extensively, of course, about the slight lack of communication, that no one really knew exactly what was going on. Do you think that the club maybe thought, you know what, we need to go into massive detail here in order to appease people and say what they want to hear?
I can see why they've done that, but there are some things on certain answers on that thing, where on the open letter, where they've written 7 or 8 lines, which, you know, if you take it all away, is effectively a no comment. So just say that, and it makes it much clearer. Because the problem is, when you've got all of this, the fact that I've spoken to loads of people, everyone's taking this letter a different way. And the fact that that's happened means this situation isn't clear. And with the big meeting tomorrow night, we really needed this to be cleared up by this open letter, and to at least give us a clearer picture of what the actual situation is. Because the fact is, even our most sort of fans who are most clued in and all of that, we don't have a full picture. And that's not great. And the problem is, all of this situation about, you know, it's going to lead to scaremongering from both sides. The fact that we don't know the full facts, and the fact that the club, if the club just said, we can't talk about this, it's confidential, that's fine. And everyone, I think, would be, okay, we can wait until this is happening. But the fact is, given a long sort of non-answer, means people are reading into a non-answer. Mm. Whereas if they'd have just been open and said, we can't talk about this, I think that's people might not read so much into that. But I mean, for me, the things I personally took away, and I'd love to hear what everyone else has taken away from this, because like I said, I've spoken to loads of people, everyone's taken away something different. But for me, the headlines from this basically are, we've got a huge shortfall, which we know, we can get a loan, but it's nowhere near enough. We can get a loan of 5 or 7 million when we've got an 11 million shortfall. So for me, that's, you know, it's something we need to look at. Whether, is there a halfway house? Is there a halfway deal we can do here? The other thing, there was a lot of talk about Cedars, which is the fundraising scheme, which we talked about at length over the last few months. Mm-hmm. And there's a potential that people could ask for their money back, and then we lose 2.5 million more on top of the existing shortfall if enough people ask for their money back.
So what's the likelihood of that happening?
We don't know. It depends on the outcome of the vote. Because if this vote goes and people say, I donated because this is a fans club and all of this, and we end up selling out, there's a good chance a lot of people will ask for their money back. And if that happens, the shortfall is even bigger than it already is. And that's not great for anyone. But the other thing, we got the stadium cost. We know it's up to £32 million now. That's up £6 million from where it was in 2015. And that's a killer.
So I raised this point last week with the guys, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want to get too deep into the side of that things, but, and I'll ask you the same question. I mean, in your opinion, is that gross mismanagement there, that someone's let this get to this stage? Like you said, up 6 million from 4 years ago. Even the fact that we're talking about servicing a loan of 5 million, maybe 7 million.
Yeah, I think before we talk about, you know, gross mismanagement or whatever we're going to call this, we need to ask people who were in charge at the time, and the two people who were in charge for the longest period in over that sort of time frame, those two are no longer at the club, in Eric Samuelson and Matt Breach, both of whom have, well, Matt Breach was voted off the Don's Trust board about a year ago. Eric Samuelson obviously resigned about 6 months ago. And it's one of those things where we need to ask those people those questions. And I really hope they're at the meeting tomorrow night so that we can ask them. Because the problem is, of the Don's Trust board, only of the 9 of them on the Don's Trust board, only 2 of them have served more than a year on that board. Mm. We really are in desperate need for the people who have been in charge or have been involved since this project started in 2015, 2014, so we can work out where this started to go wrong and who was in charge when it went wrong. Because, I mean, this meeting, it can't turn into a witch hunt. But before we decide where we can go, I think we need to know how we got here. To work out, you know, because that will affect some people's vote.
With regards to the potential stadium itself, at the moment, right, you're saying, and we're looking at the bullets that you've given us here, only one stand it can only be a one-stand stadium with no bars. So there's an issue here, corporate as well, that it might not even meet EFL standards.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's one of the things that is said in the open letter the club are going to talk about, whether there's going to be the opportunity to potentially redevelop it in the future, expand it in the future, work on it. But the problem is, with no corporate facilities, then we'll have to go down the league so far, because, like I said, realistically, with that stadium, we're looking Conference Prem, probably Conference South. And at that level, are we actually going to be able to build a 9,000 stadium? Or, well, an extra 6,000 seats on top of what we've got there? And I think the answer is probably no. So I think if we go for the 4,000 option, I think that's what we've got for a very long time. And I think we need to think very carefully about how we go from here. But looking at it, I think there are ways we can get the money. It's mentioned that we're speaking to Merton Council still. Loads of councils are giving football club money. Let's not talk about the examples where it's gone hideously wrong, because we need to try and focus on some positives.
Absolutely.
But there's an opportunity there. There's talk of a company that's willing to give us an £11 million loan. They're an offshore company. And I think it's one of those things where we have to try and work out how we got here, what are our options now, and where are we going in the long term? Because there's no point trying to focus on the short term here if things are going to go wrong in the long term. And I think it's one of those things where we have to try and get this right. We can't rush this. It's essential we think very carefully and don't make a rash decision, because this is going to affect our club for the next 100 years.
Well, yeah, it certainly is. Mark Hendricks has tweeted in, no surprises there. Those who should be, and I'm going to read this out because it's quite funny. Those who should be held to account will have disappeared like a fart in the wind, he said, which is very true.
Yeah, it is. And you look at it and just focusing on, you know, the people who were responsible for this, it's come out that we got £7.5 million for King's Meadow, which I think is probably about right. But you look at it, and we've wasted a lot of that money. We've wasted £4 million.
Absolutely. And this is where we talk about the mismanagement, the people just not looking at those fixtures and not seeing the bigger picture about where AFC Wimbledon can be. I mean, Plough Lane has been talked about for years. This was the vision. This was the grand vision. Everybody wanted to go home. And Stu made a great point last week when he said, I just want to go home. Yeah. I don't care what it looks like. I just want to go home.
Yeah, that's the thing. Stu's very emotional because he went to Plough Lane when he was young. Obviously, I'm too young to have ever been there. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of our fans, this is what the last 20, 30 years have been building towards. And the fact that we sold King's Meadow and we were this close to it. And you're looking at it and this shortfall, and now you're saying it was 1.2 million we've given to Kingstonian, which we already knew, but £2.8 million of the state of selling King's Meadow has been spent on the budget over the last 2 years.
The word budget, mate. You know what backlash that's going to get. But no, please, but elaborate.
It's essential we talk about this.
Absolutely, of course it is.
That amount of money is absolutely huge for us. And you look at it, and the club has said a £7 million loan is serviceable for us. It's an £11 million shortfall. And we've spent, what was it, £4 million or so from the King's Meadow money and arguably wasted it. And 11 takeaway 4, as we all know, is 7. Which means that it's a serviceable loan without that wasted money. You look at it and you look at the players who that money's gone towards and you think, is it worth it? And I don't think there's a single fan who would say it is.
Just quickly touching on the players, we're going to get onto some of the rest of the points in a moment. Just to touch on the players, do you think that this is affecting the players at all when they're coming out to play for AFC Wimbledon? And also, I'd imagine this is all you guys are talking about at games.
Yeah.
I mean, you're watching the game of football in front of you, but in the back of your minds, you're thinking, we don't know what's going to happen with the future of our club.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. We've had one game since this came out, which was yesterday, and it was an away game. The fact we haven't had a home game between this news breaking and us having the most important meeting in the club's history since we reformed, I think that's just so wrong. We haven't had time for anyone individually to digest the news and work out, you know, think with your head rather than your heart. No one's had an opportunity to do that. And we haven't had an opportunity to speak to others and work out where anyone else is. And we, like I said earlier, we cannot rush this decision, because if we do, it's only going to hurt us in the long term. And, you know, we're looking at all of these things, like about future donations and all of this thing. But really, this is about the soul of the club. We have to decide. This cannot just be about a bit of metal on a building site. This has to be, what do we stand for? Because if we sell out now, why didn't we sell out when Darren McAntony, who's now at Peterborough, came in to buy the club 15 years ago? Why didn't we sell out then and do this journey in half the time? would have been a power lane for 5-10 years by now. Had we done that,
would you have been happy with that?
No, and I wouldn't want us selling out now. Mm-hmm. I just think that if we sell out now, we're giving up a fight that's been such a hard fight, but we're so nearly there. I just don't think we can give up the fight now.
With regards to all the info, you're saying the overload of info that was in that response to those open letters, investors were alluded to, however, they weren't named.
Yeah, and this is the thing that's concerning a lot of people. A lot of people are worried about this, because for a lot of people are thinking, if you were trying to invest in a fan-owned club, a family club like Wimbledon, surely the first thing you'd do is say, yeah, this is me, this is what I stand for, this is what I want, and show the fans your vision. Because as we all know, if anyone's going to buy any club, it don't matter whether it's us or any club at all, you need the fans to buy into your vision of what you're trying to do with that club. And the fact that no one's put their hand up yet and said that this is me, this is what I want, you've got to think worst case scenario about it.
And the investment, I believe, is not the full 11 million, is it? Fall short of that?
No, they're only putting in 7.5 million, which doesn't even fund the stadium shortfall. So we're going to need a loan anyway. So we're selling our club and we're still going to need a huge loan. See, the only thing that I could possibly even make me consider selling our club is if it's a lot of money to pay off the new stadium in full with no loan or anything else, and money for the youth academy, money for a new training ground, and enough money to sustain us long term with restrictions in place on, you know, making sure we don't go haywire on a budget. The fact that they're not even going to fund the stadium shortfall means the playing budget is still going to be as bad as it is now. If anything, it could be worse, because, you know, as a club, we rely hugely on donations from fans. Fans aren't going to donate if it's not a fans club anymore. They're just not.
And one of the issues within that is that the new owners could issue those shares without even consulting the Don's Trust. Yeah. I think that's extremely worrying.
Yeah, that is. I mean, let's say they go in and they say the Don's Trust control, that the new investors get 35% and the Don's Trust get 40% or something along those lines. What's the point in being a majority shareholder now if in 2 weeks' time you're going to have no shares at all because they've diluted you to such an extent where it's not even worth you attending shareholder meetings? That's going to be what is going to happen, because that is the only reason they would be insisting on making sure they have exclusive rights on new share issue, is to make sure the Don's Trust don't get a say when they're going to be diluted in the future. And that means that what we have to do now is effectively say, right now, we're not selling 30% of our club or 35%. We're selling everything. Absolutely everything of our club. And people need to be aware they're voting on that, not just for 30% of the club. Because if you're saying, oh, it's only 30%, we'll still be majority shareholders, we'll still have three places on the board, that's not bad. But if you go on there and we are selling our whole club and our whole club's future. And people need to be aware of that, because we don't get another chance of this. If we vote to sell, there's never going to be a coming back from this. We're never going to get an opportunity to come and return from this. And people need to make sure they do that, so they vote thinking about the next 30 years, not just making sure that we've got a nice stadium in 9 months.
Tweeting from Kieran Johnson, he says, surely giving up the fight, in inverted commas, would be option one or two. Why vote for a slow death?
There's not. I mean, I think if we can get a loan in to try and fund this, whether that's from an £11 million loan, which is going to be hard to repay, but hopefully we can find a way to deal with Merton to try and refinance it, or whether it's a halfway option to try and maybe just build the main stand, fit out the main stand, and maybe build one or two other smaller stands to try and get the capacity there. But I think, realistically, even if we only build the 3,500 capacity main stand with no facilities, it's still going to be our club. It won't be a Football League club, but it will still be our club. And we've got to decide what's more important, our club or a Football League place.
Okay, well, we haven't finished this debate, mate. There's plenty more to discuss, and we'll do that on the AFC Women of Fans show on Love Sport. Back in a moment.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
The AFC Women of Fans show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with George Jones from the 9 Years podcast. It won't come as a shock to any listeners to hear that we are, of course, focusing on the ownership update at the moment. Thank you for all your tweets. Keep sending in your thoughts, your concerns, your fears, your worries about the future of AFC Wimbledon. Or perhaps you're not completely worried. Perhaps there are alternative fans out there who think there isn't such a huge problem and maybe that this is a good thing. I doubt there's many, but hey, there might just be. 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Just a couple of tweets in for you. Mark Hendricks has tweeted in again. He says, the Blue and Yellow Club have been financing the playing budget for over a decade now. What's the difference between this and having a different source of money? Peter B, however, says, I totally agree with George. If the potential investors had come forward with 30 million plus, it would be a difficult decision. But this deal is a bad deal any day of the week. They're looking to take advantage of our weakness.
Yeah, I completely agree with Peter there. I mean, let's be honest, one day we might have to sell our club, but we need to do it for the right deal at the right time. And this is a horrific deal for us and our future as a club. And we need to make sure that we get this decision right for the long term. Going to what Mark Hendricks said about the Yellow and Blue Club financing the playing budget. For those who don't know, the Yellow and Blue Club is effectively some of our more wealthy supporters who effectively do fundraising things. They put in a bit of money every year to the playing budget and they get to do things like going and watch the players train and benefits like that. And for me, that's one of those things of that's inflating the budget to artificial strengths and making it artificially high. And that's what has got us into this mess. Playing as a League One team has got us into this mess where we're having to pay, you know, adding 2.8 million of the King's Meadow money to the budget to fund being a League One team. That's what has got us into trouble here. So I think that is a problem as well. And we need to make sure we're at a sustainable level. But I think there's no point sort of doing that if we're going to just sell out. Because we need to make sure we're okay here in the long term. And the Yellow and Blue Club have not been doing that. They've been doing it for short-term success rather than long-term stability. So that what they've done hasn't helped the club in the long term. Yeah, it gave us a day out at Wembley and has got us the opportunity to play Sunderland. But it's led us to where we are now. But it is completely different to getting investors in. And that's just because of the fact that they don't run our club. They're effectively glorified sponsors. They get to go and watch the players train. They don't get to vote on. They don't have any meaningful say on the way the club is run, what happens, or who sits on the board. They're just sponsors. They're no different to Cherry Red. They're different to Sports Interactive or Football Manager or any like Paul Strank. They're just one of our sponsors, effectively, for what they get. It's just a different title and a different way of donations. But it's completely different to investors, and people need to understand that. Yes, it's damaged our club in the long term, but it's nowhere near the same as getting investment.
If someone said to you now, George, everything's fine, you're going to get Plough Lane back, you're all going to move in there, it's all fine, it's all dandy, the club will have no problems moving forward. However, you're in the sixth tier of English football.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. For me, if we have a finished stadium, I don't care if we go into non-league.
Really?
Yeah, because if we've got a complete 9,000 stadium with all the fixtures and fittings, we'll be able to use the corporate facilities, we'll be able to use it during the week, and our budget will raise naturally to an extent where we can push for promotion back to being a League Two or maybe an odd year in League One. Because if we, realistically for me, the key here is the fan ownership and the new stadium in that order. And I think we need to make sure, A, we're fans owned, even if that's playing in the 4,000 capacity stadium in the Ryman. For me, I'd rather have that than being a sellout club in League One.
Interesting. Love to know what other people think of that one. In about 24 hours time, George, and then some, I'd imagine you will be there for a lot longer after 20 to 9 on Monday evening. You will be at King's Meadow.
Yes. Yeah, it's a big, big meeting. There's not a vote on the night, but this is where we discuss what is the option we're going to take. Are we going to sell out? Are we going to try and get a loan and try and find a way of financing this stadium? Or are we just going to build a 4,000 stadium and slip back into non-league? We're going to have to discuss which of these options we're going to take. Like I said, there won't be a vote. But it's so important everyone turns up. Every Don's Trust member turns up and has their say so we can get a view on what's going to happen here. Because every Don's Trust member, you pay your £25 and you get a say. This is the most important decision in the club's history. It's so important we take our time. We hear a range of views, a range of opinions, whether you agree with me or not. It's so important you turn up and you make yourself heard on Monday night at King's Meadow. Meeting starts at 7:30. For those people who can't make it, because obviously it is a Monday night, we do understand that. The Doncha Trust have worked with us at the 9 Years Podcast to be able to organise a live stream of the meeting, which will be on either the Doncha Trust YouTube or the 9 Years YouTube page. I don't think it's been decided which is which. Hopefully it'll be on the Doncha Trust YouTube page if everything works well on the night. We'll be live from about 7. The meeting starts at 7:30 at King's Meadow. And like I said, it's so important. If you're a Doncha Trust member, either get down there or watch the stream and make sure you ask questions, make sure you say what you want to say. Because this is the most important moment in the club's history. And it's our first indication to work out what our fans are thinking.
How many people are you expecting to be down there? Like you said, you haven't had a chance to meet yet at the club since this news broke. This is the first opportunity for everybody to get together. What are we looking at numbers-wise?
That's the thing, because there's no precedent for this. No, we haven't had a meeting like this since the meeting in Wimbledon in 2002 when we were formed. So no one has any idea. We just have to hope it's a large number. We've got 3,000 Doncha Trust members. Obviously, a large number of them are overseas or live up north. But it's so important that wherever you live, either you get down to King's Meadow or you watch online, I believe they're hoping there'll be a facility to submit your question through the YouTube page. Hopefully we'll be able to get that working on the night so that you'll be able to make your voice heard even if you can't be at King's Meadow. Like I said, we don't know how many are going to turn up, but it's so important everyone has their voice heard.
Okay, we are going to move on now, George. Just your final thoughts on this in terms of where you're at with everything that's going on.
Personally, I think the worst thing we could do is sell our club. For me, that's without a doubt the worst option. Obviously, my preferred option is we get a deal with Merton or from some finance company where we can get a realistic loan that can fund our new stadium complete build. Failing that, I think we've got to find, maybe take the £5 million or £7 million loan that we can look at, we can decide if it's going to work, and at the very least, we can fit out the main stand. Because as much as a football fan, as much as it hurts me to say the money is in the corporates, even at a club in League One, the money is in the corporate facilities. And that's what's killing us right now at King's Meadow in terms of our budget. So we need to figure that out, maybe build one or two more stands. But like I said, all of them are preferable. Every single option, even slipping into the Ryman with a 4,000 stadium with no facilities and no bars and no corporates, that is preferable to selling out our club and giving up a fight that's been going on for 20 years.
You, George Jones, strike me as someone who's never done corporate before at a football stadium. Have you? Have you been in corporates? Have you been eating those prawn sambos?
I am ashamed to say I have been at corporate for an FA Cup semi-final at Wembley.
No, get out of town.
And a League Cup final.
You're kidding me.
No.
Which ones?
League Cup final was Bradford versus Swansea.
Oh, is that game?
Really?
In corporate, yeah. Yes. Thank you.
That's odd. I wasn't sitting next to you, was I?
I was sat in front of Phil Parkinson for that one.
Oh, okay.
No, I wasn't. That's nonsense. He was in the dugout. He was the manager. I was not at that game at all. I was at the following season's game between Manchester City and Sunderland.
Yes.
And that's why, because Phil Parkinson was there a year later. Okay. So I wasn't at the game. So we weren't there together, mate. We didn't brush shoulders, sadly.
That's good. However, in the FA Cup game, I think it was Hull versus Sheffield United. FA Cup semi-final. Can't remember how long it was.
It was like a 5-3, wasn't it, that one?
I can't remember, but those are the two games I've been at corporates.
Okay.
I'm ashamed to say.
You should be ashamed.
Ashamed at Club Wembley. I'm ashamed I've been to an FA Cup semi-final in corporates. I am everything that's wrong with modern football.
Well, this is the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. We've got the Academy and Development Squad update next, and also looking ahead to that Doncaster game.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
A George Jones, the red-nosed womble, had a very shiny nose. Mate, I got to tell you, I just noticed that. You're struggling, aren't you?
Yeah, nah, it's not good.
Crikey, this is what it does. You see, this is what this ordeal has done to AFC Wimbledon fans. You are sniffling away there with your little hanky.
Yeah, nah, it's just one of those things where it seems to happen all the time. Whenever something important happens, everyone seems to get ill. Just one of those things.
It is just one of those things. We are going to quickly read out some clarification, George, because you got ahead of yourself, didn't you? You were thinking it was a match day. You were thinking that the meeting, you had to be there at 7, first one through the doors with your pasty and your cup of tea, etc., etc. However, quick clarification. Thank you, Mark Hendricks, again. The stream will not be live from 7. It will be live from around 7:20, 25 past 7. No way, like I just said, will the guys be doing an early George. They won't be online half an hour before it starts. So about 10, 5 minutes before it starts, make sure you tune in to see George Jones, of course, in pure HD. Every single one of those whiskers.
Yeah, no, that's not good. Thankfully, I'm behind the camera this time, so you viewers won't have to suffer that.
Okay, right, we're going to move on now to the Academy and Development Squad update.
Yeah, it's been a relatively big week for the Academy and the Development Squad. We played in a Surrey Senior Cup game against Molesey during the week, which doesn't sound important considering what we've been talking about the last hour. But it's such an important thing that we keep focusing on the Academy. Because whatever happens, we are going to have to cut our budget in the very near future. And it's the Academy players that we're going to have to fill important roles. We've seen it over the last couple of years with Toby Sibbick, Paul Kalambai, Paul Osu this season, who have come in and filled in and done incredible jobs. So this is the opportunity for the sort of next generation of those players to come in and show what they've got. Like I said, we played Molesey. We went through on penalties. And the interesting thing was Adam Rosgrove played in that. It's the first game he's played since coming back from injury. And it was against a combined counties team. But he didn't even look up to their standard of players.
Really?
And this is the Adam Rosgrove. He's the player we signed from Cardiff Met University in the summer. You know, a bit of fanfare when we arrived him because we thought he could be the next Jamie Vardy. And talked about it a bit on the show. But for me, he's someone who I've had questions about because I haven't seen anything there that makes me think that's a conference or even a Football League player. And he really struggled. I know it's his first game back, so we're going to cut him a lot of slack. But really, over the next couple of weeks or so, we need to see something about him to justify us bringing him in, because right now we haven't seen anything from him. The draw for the next round's already been done. Like I said, that was a Surrey Senior Cup game. We've been drawn away to South Park. So nobody can make any jokes about that.
Gonna have yourself a time, yeah, aren't you, George?
Yeah, no one can make any jokes about this because it's going to be done to death over the next month or so before the game is played. Like I said, also we got the Surrey Cup. London Senior Cup is being played this Tuesday. We're away to Cray Valley Paper Mills in a glamour tie.
Wow, that is the one they're all talking
about.
Yeah,
that is the one. And people can't stop talking about this game for us. It'll be a good opportunity, like I said. Hopefully people will get a reasonable crowd there to watch the next generation of stars coming through. Seeing people like Jack Madeline, who's been involved in the first team this year. Rudoni, he's got a big future ahead of him. Hussein Belair should be playing, and he was immense last week against Molesey. He was our best player in the team that already had four or five players who've played Football League games. And Hussein's got a big future ahead of him, I think. So it's a good opportunity to come down and see those next generations of players.
Are Cray Valley Paper Mills the only team in world football to have two double L's in their name?
I have no idea. We'll have to get David to Google that one over the next 10 minutes
Absolutely.
Or so.
Anybody know that? Anybody know there's another team in world football that has two double L's in their name? That is also what we're talking about. George, what else?
The under-18s managed to have a game yesterday for continued their good run. They beat Southend away 2-1. Ayub Asal, who we've mentioned quite a lot on the show for various different things, he scored twice and then managed to get sent off. So nice little Wimbledon player there in Ayub Asal. Hopefully he'll be playing on Tuesday night. You know, good player. He's one who, if I had to pick one player in our under-23s who I think will make it, it's him. He's not the biggest, but the passion, the energy and the physicality in someone so small and his technical ability, he's someone who I really think will make it. And I think I can see big things for him. Probably even before the end of the season, he'll make his league debut for us, I think. He's that good. And he's going to come on a long way over the next year or so. And like I said, he's scoring for fun in the under-18s, which considering he's a midfielder, isn't that easy. I think he's averaged more than a goal every other game last season in the 18s as well. You know, big opportunity for him coming up in sort of playing against men's football in the senior cup ties. So it's a good opportunity for him to come in. And the last sort of section on this is the FA Youth Cup, which is a week on Tuesday on the 17th. We're away to Sheffield United at Bramall Lane, and the club might be running a coach. And to an under-18s game, that just shows how many of our fans care about our academy and care about these young players, that we might be taking a coach to an under-18s game.
You'll definitely be going to that, right?
Of course I'm going to that. I think it's one of those things where it's so important we can get a crowd there, because playing at Bramall Lane, it'll be such an experience for the players. And if we can get a reasonable following up there, that'll do so much for their development. Playing in front of fans, playing in front of in a big stadium, they'll learn from that. And it's a winnable game. That's the thing. Our under-18s, I think, could probably be anyone in the country this year.
Wow. George Jones, your under-18s could be anyone in the country.
On our day, I think they could. You look at it and you look at how well we've done it with other age groups. I mean, for us, the benchmark is always that team that beat Watford, beat Newcastle and gave Chelsea a hell of a game. Mm-hmm. I think that we've got a better... This age group is better than that age group, in my opinion. So, personally, there's no reason why I think you look at it. Plymouth, who we lost to a couple of years ago, beat Man City in their cup run that year. This is a competition where big upsets happen, and I can see us pulling one off this year if we can get past Sheffield United. If we beat Sheffield United, we're at home to either Fulham or South Shields. So I'm just grateful that one's not away.
Yeah, absolutely. Last bit of news. Anthony Ferguson been appointed new academy head of coaching?
Yeah, he's taken over the role from Michael Hamilton, who's moved to academy manager now after Jeremy Sawyer left to go to West Ham. And again, he's someone who he's been working with the FA. He's been working with the FA as a sort of coaching developer over there. And it just shows that, you know, Michael Hamilton was so good at what he does. He got a fully deserved promotion to be an academy manager. And the fact that our academy manager was plucked from being a League One Cat 3 academy manager to going to West Ham and their academy and their setup just show you how highly thought of our academy and our academy staff are. And I think it's so important that people remember that and consider that. And it's such a good thing. And I've heard very good things about him. Hopefully he'll be able to come in, keep our coaches developing, keeping our coaches forward thinking and keep them going to find that next Will Nightingale, to find that next player who could go on and develop into either a first team star for us or maybe even a future England star, like we've seen with players who've got playing for us in the England age groups.
Okay, well, we shall now look ahead. We've got about a minute and a half to go, George. Of course, it's Doncaster Rovers heading to King's Meadow next weekend. This is a team you've faced twice already this season, both in the FA Cup. Incidentally, that's the only game they've won in their past eight. Haven't won since that defeat victory over you guys. So they're not on the best run of form at the moment.
No, they're not, and both games against them were fairly even. We were probably the better team in the first FA Cup game, which was at King's Meadow. Second game, we matched them for 45 minutes, but just ran out of steam towards the end. So it's a competitive game for us. I mean, they've got James Coppinger, who seems to always score against us. They create a lot of chances. They're a good footballing side, but it's a winnable game. And after dropping points against Bolton, and with what's going on off the pitch, I think the whole club really needs a morale-boosting win. And I hope we can get that on Saturday. And even if we don't, you look at our run for the next three after this game against Doncaster. We've got Tranmere away, Bristol away, and then Southend at home. And you've got to look at those games and think they're winnable. We need a good run in before January when we're going to lose Force, we're going to lose Delaney potentially, we might lose Max Sanders as well. It's really important we get a run in before Christmas to try and get further clear of relegation than we already are.
Lovely stuff. George, great talking to you this weekend. Of course, we'll be back next Sunday at 8 p.m. on Love Sport with all the updates from that Monday meeting, of course. Thank you, Mark Hendricks. TUS seller. Yes, I get that. However, I was looking for the double L. Villarreal, of course, Mallorca, two teams with double L's, but it was the double L. Yeah. Perhaps I'm missing something with that particular tweet. I do not know. This has been the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport. We'll see you next week at 8 p.m.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.